Hey, this is Sunny. Once again, if you were listening to this, you were listening on the free feed via iTunes or whatever. As always, you're a couple weeks behind. We're talking about Gunpowder Milkshake, the kind of Jane Wick type movie that was on Netflix, that is on Netflix. You can watch it after you listen to this. But we've also talked about Pig, which is one of the best movies of the year, in my opinion. And that's already up right now. And this week we're going to be talking about Jungle Cruise, which is not one of the best movies of the year. But you should sign up. Just go to subbeacon.com. You'll be up to date. Get all the member exclusive stuff, like our extensive ranking of every MCU movie. It's as little as $1 a month. Just go sign up now. And that will keep this show sustainable, since, you know, advertising doesn't work. Doesn't do it. We can't keep Vic in veal chops forever doing that. So go sign up and listen to the show as it comes out instead of 2 weeks later. Okay.
Sam, your talents are needed. Somebody stole from us.
Who's crazy enough to steal from the firm?
Is it done?
There's a change of plan. They have an 8-year-old girl. I can't leave her to die.
Sam, you killed the wrong people.
You're no longer under our protection.
Some bad men are coming to hurt us.
We have to go where it's safe. Hi, Mom.
Am I a grandmother?
God, no.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan Vilas and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe. Tell your friends. We're the perfect traveling companions on that long summer road trip or long commute back to work. And don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL.
I have some good news and some bad news.
Oof. Bad news first.
The bad news is Ben Dreyfuss and I can't be friends.
Oh, no. Why not?
Because of the good news. Flag made it.
Oh. He came through in
he
the
came
end.
Came through. He texted, so to speak. He texted me and he said, I woke up and I have 3 hours of time missing from my memory. And that is both wonderful and it scares me. So, yeah. Yay, Flag. I'm glad you're back.
Most people say from that experience, by the way.
I have a point of order to raise with you guys from KSA. She demands that we do a show about something called Formula One Drive to Survive, which she claims is Good Place / Ted Lasso level amazing.
Wait a minute. Is this? I thought that's like, it sounds like it's a documentary, no?
Yeah, is it not like a Top Gear?
I have no idea.
That's what it sounds like.
I saw this comment from KSA. I wasn't sure how to respond because I have no idea what it is.
I think Netflix. She's never steered me wrong. Maybe she steered you guys wrong. So I'm open to doing that.
We'll take it under consideration.
Okay. And the third thing I feel like it's important for us to talk about. Because we're taping this a little early. We're taping this on Tuesday, July 20th.
Tuesday.
And Jeff Bezos' space penis successfully launched. It slipped the surly bonds of Earth. And I am very curious as to what you boys think about his space penis.
Okay, what are you talking about? I mean,
Jeff Bezos went into space.
Yes,
You saw the news, right?
What's with the space penis?
Well, it looks a little bit like a penis.
Oh, you mean the ship?
See the No, Sonny. It's not that it looks a little bit like a penis, right? So every obelisk, every tower, every rocket is just sort of, by general definition, vaguely phallic.
Yeah.
This thing looks like Seth Rogen built it.
You mean it's like the fuel tanks are like too giant at the base of it?
This looks like,
but it's also got a little head on it.
Oh,
a
okay.
Little mushroom head up at the top. Uh-huh. If Seth Rogen
and one little window. In the middle.
It's like something out of Austin Powers. Really.
Wow. 100%. If Seth Rogen was doing a sci-fi type movie, this is the This is the rocket he would have come
imagine
up with.
That's what you want to be on.
Imagine
on
Sausage
it.
Party, but about the, space.
Yeah, that's that would, right.
That's what...
I was curious why all of a sudden it was a bigger deal than Richard Branson, because I didn't realize how much further up he was.
Oh, a lot further.
In terms of kilometers, hundreds
of kilometers. I mean, I would say that he actually went into space, as opposed to Richard Branson, who just kind of went up kind of
high.
What do
you call it, suborbital or whatever the term is? Does that mean Richard Branson's going to have to outdo Jeff Bezos now in what? Orbit the moon.
Slingshot.
We got to see what Elon Musk is going to do.
Oh, yeah. In the movie version of this, Richard Branson would have died because he moved up his launch to get ahead of Bezos, even though he wasn't going very high.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so in the movie version of this, his space plane, which was launched from a plane, it wasn't even launched
from
the
ground. Yeah.
It was like the right
X-1.
Stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have blown up, and then we would have had the drama of, like, does Bezos survive? Does he not survive? But of course Bezos survives.
Or that Branson's ship would explode, you know, at the launch pad because of a radical Jake Busey.
Mm.
Do you think
that the space penis was perhaps bombarded by cosmic rays while
he's
up there?
Him powers
and maybe
now?
Jeff is going to come back with some extra powers? Maybe he'll, like...
Additional powers.
He's always stretching. He's always reaching.
He's
like the Fantastic Four?
Yes!
Something happened to all of them? Michael Chiklis?
You caught right up on that one, Vic.
I did.
It took you a second.
Considering I didn't see any of those movies, I think I saw part of the one with Jessica Alba. That's a Marvel movie, isn't it?
Yeah, but not Marvel Cinematic Universe. That was a Marvel movie. Chris Evans is in that movie. Chris Evans
plays... Yes, as the Torch.
He plays the Human Torch. It was before his turn as Captain America.
It's funny that people were willing to give that a pass.
He's one of the rare actors to occupy two roles within the same cinematic universe.
Crazy. It's so crazy.
Well, it's not the same cinematic universe. They're
just both
Marvel movies.
Yeah.
Lots of people have gone back and forth between DC and Marvel. I was like David Harbour, for instance, who was in Black Widow. He was also in Suicide Squad, and he was Hellboy. That's actually three separate cinematic universes labels,
labels. So here's the question I wanted to ask you guys: if Jeff Bezos had been bombarded by cosmic rays while aboard his space penis, what power do you think he would have wanted? Let's just go from the original Fantastic Four plus Victor Von Doom, right? So the five of them were bombarded, in the movie version, not in the comics. What do you think he would have? Would he have wanted to become Michael Chiklis?
No, it's too bad.
He'd want to be Human Torch.
If it were the X-Men, he would have been Professor X mind control. I think that would have been his thing, because that's what he wants, ultimately.
But that's not the Fantastic Four. Jesus, Vic. Come on.
They're mutants. You see, they're born that way. They can't help
mutants,
but
mutants have the X chromosome. Come on. He'd want to be the Human Torch, or possibly the Invisible Woman. Imagine if Jeff Bezos had the power of invisibility. Think about all the trouble he could get into as an invisible man.
Let me then flip this question around for Victorino.
Sue Storm.
If you could have any of the Fantastic Four's powers, or you could be Jeff Bezos, which would you rather?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos' power of being Jeff Bezos, way cooler than any of the Fantastic Four.
The Fantastic Four, I assume they live comfortably in sort of space-agey, you know, headquarters, but they don't have the money. They just don't have the money.
Yeah, but they've got tons of money though, because Reed Richards has patented all of his ideas. I bet Reed Richards is, if he's not a billionaire, he's probably pretty close. What's the Fantastic Four's headquarter called?
It's gonna kill me. I'll effort that while you guys talk.
Reed Richards was fabulously wealthy. He supported the whole team with the money from his inventions. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Santino, how are you? Oh, the Baxter Building.
The Baxter Building. That's what it was
called. Which, funnily enough, we have a street address on it. It is at the corner of 42nd and Mad.
Wow, that's pricey.
How funny
it's
is
in
that?
It's in New York City. That's... It's in New York City, so.
Okay.
The Baxter Building. Do you think the Baxter Building was destroyed when the aliens attacked when Loki showed up?
Mm.
You know what's funny? There actually is a building on Fifth Avenue in Midtown called the Fisk Building.
Mm, like the Kingpin lives there.
This is the worst. This is the worst thing
we've
ever done.
Well, you know,
even
you
worse
let
than
us
that
down,
MCU. Even worse than that MCU ranking.
You can.
Oh,
cut
hey,
it all out.
Any feedback? Any feedback on the MCU
people
ranking?
Seem to, people seem to like it. People seem to really like the MCU ranking.
I saw.
So
I saw
it worked out.
I saw Adam White at this work retreat that Kate was at, and he was giving a talk. And afterwards, he said, I'm very nervous and with some trepidation about listening to that bonus episode. And I assured him it's not as bad as he might think it was.
I was reliably informed by the one Jonathan Podhoretz.
Oh, no.
That while our bottom five was right, we were insane to not have the Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man, the original Iron
all the
Man,
way up
as the top two.
Bah!
Ridiculous.
I mean, I thought Guardians of the Galaxy should have been a little bit higher, but he also thinks Avengers is terrible.
Yeah.
So John Podhoretz does not know what he's talking about when it comes to movies. No. You can take,
the Avengers
take that
had
to
a little bit of song.
You're
and
listening
dance
right
in
now,
it.
John, and I'm telling you, you're just wrong. You don't know this form of art called the movie. You don't get it.
Wow. So. That's hard.
Santino, how are you, buddy?
Sunny Bunch, what's going on?
Excited. I can't wait to get text messages from J-Pod about this because it's going to happen. He's going to say, well, I know more. I've forgotten more about movies last year than you've ever known. It's fine. It's all right. I'm good. It's been a weird couple weeks. I was in D.C., as you guys remember. Then Beth went out of town, so I had the kids all to myself. And I did what I always do when I have the kids all to myself. I went to a nice grocery store, and I got a good piece of meat. And I cooked it on my cast iron skillet, and it was great. It was fantastic.
Did you do one of your 500-degree specials?
You got to get the 500 degrees, man. If you can't get your oven up to 500 degrees, you might as well be a caveman.
I can get it, but the whole place would be up in smoke, so I can't do that.
It definitely so much smoke. I had to open. I opened like all the windows. Yeah, I mean, I have like a vent hood in my kitchen,
and
that,
it's
like
still
when
a lot.
And it's still you just gotta get you gotta get all that out. But anyway. I don't know, man. It's fine. I watched all four of the Predator movies, not Alien versus Predator, but the Predator movies.
I was going
to
say,
talked
if you ever
about
had
the last
to watch,
one, right?
If you ever had to watch the Predator more than
the
once,
Shane Black one,
that's
I watched it again. I watched it again because I just watched all of them because I was like, why not? And Predators, which is the one with Adrian Brody and Topher Grace and Alice Braga. And Lawrence Fishburne. I like not great by any stretch of the imagination, but at least like a competent, like decent action movie. But oh my God, that Shane Black Predator movie is so bad.
It's terrible.
It's,
there are things
so
missing,
bad.
Poorly edited. They just probably, had so many different,
there's all sorts of stuff that happened in that. I mean, like one
post-production.
Just one,
disaster.
One thing, like they had to take out like 2 minutes of material, like literally 3 days before it went to picture lock because like what's her name, Olivia Munn found out that she was in a scene with a sex predator. This was during all the Me Too stuff. So like her introduction is just like she shows up. It's just like, hey, it's Olivia Munn on my screen.
You mean there
She's
was somebody who was an actual predator on the
an
set
actual
of the
sexual
predator?
Predator, an actual sexual predator on the set of the Predator.
And they just took him out of the.
And they literally just cut his material out. So like her whole introduction was like getting hit on by this guy. Supposedly, nobody's seen it, but she's like getting hit on by this guy. This guy's like hitting on her, and she's ignoring him and like finally puts him in his place. And it's at a dog park, I think. And instead, the movie just starts with her like walking her dog, and like a van pulls up and is like, come with us to the secret science base. We'll take your dog. And we're like, what the fuck is happening?
What is the name of the villain in that who was, in the People versus O.J. Simpson? I forget his
Sterling
name.
Sterling K. Brown. He's great. He's like the only
good
thing about that movie.
But again, there's something going on there because it's like, how when we first meet him and how he's popping the Tums. He's got this whole character thing, but not quite enough. And then suddenly he dies, and it happens so quickly.
Well, that is like, again, we did a whole episode on this, so we shouldn't repeat all of this. I'm sure people have listened to it like 100 times because all of our episodes are gold. You should listen to all of them 100 times. But his death in that movie is literally like. Literally blink and you miss it. I mean, yes. I saw the movie. I remember seeing the movie with I think I saw it with Peter Suderman because it was a press screening, and afterwards he was like, "This movie was so incompetent. They didn't even show what happened to Sterling K. Brown." I was like, "They did, but it was so quick and so dark."
He died
lit.
In a tree. Didn't he die in a tree?
Well, he like shot himself in the face with the Predator gun that was on his shoulder.
Is that
but, like,
what happened?
It's literally like he like turns his head. And he gets shot, but they cut to where you're looking at it from a different angle. And if you're not really paying attention, you don't realize it's him. Anyway, the whole thing is bad. The whole thing is bad. But
you know,
like
the son in that movie, who I found kind of annoying in that movie, he was great, however, in Good Boys.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fabulous.
I like him. I like him. The other thing about the Predator movies, and I'll move on from this, but watching them all again, it's really interesting watching Predator 2. Because Predator 2 is very much the one with Danny Glover. It's set in Los Angeles. It's like, what if the Predator came to Los Angeles and hunted street gangs? But like, if you watch this movie, it really is not a sci-fi action adventure movie. What it is a late 70s, early 80s, late 80s, early 90s crime panic movie. It is a movie that basically says, we have this gang problem in America. What if we let the Predator kill all the gangs? In LA. I mean, like, it has the most ridiculous gangs. It has these like Jamaican drug dealers who are like chicken bones.
Yeah.
There's
it the Colombians or the Italians, and they string a guy up and then they gut him.
Yeah, while his like naked girlfriend is sitting there watching.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Who the Predator spares, of course. Also, this is the movie where the Predator like comes up to the cop, and the cop is pregnant. The cop is pregnant with a child, and because the Predator is pro-life, the Predator is the Predator is the Antonin Scalia of the Predator world. He's like, no, I will not murder you, pregnant lady.
Also,
even though you have a gun, like she should have been. She had the gun.
Yeah, the gun is the gun.
She should have been fair game.
The kid, remember,
the kid was innocent.
The kid,
the
great
baby,
because the toy. But there was the other kid with the toy gun. And he says, "Oh, it's fake." So it did. Yeah.
Wait. So I never saw Predator 2. In Predator 2, the Predator is the good guy.
Well, no, not
but
exactly.
But you understand he's not just a killing machine like Alien. You know,
well, in all of these movies,
they came down here for sport.
Right. I mean, like, that's the basic premise of the first one. But because you like all of the guys on the team who are getting killed, it's like, all right, this guy's clearly the bad guy.
Yes.
But in Predator 2, the Predator, like, hunts the gangs in Los Angeles. And, yeah, a couple of cops do get killed. Bill Paxton gets killed. Yeah, the Hispanic cop, I think, whose name I forget, he gets killed. But it's the Predator kills almost all like Jamaican drug lords, and then like on a there's like a Bernie Getz scene in a subway where like some guys try and like shoot some, you know, innocent bystanders, and this guy pulls out a gun, and then it's like everybody else on the train pulls out a gun, and so it's like the gangs versus the, you know, vigilantes, and then the Predator kills all of those guys. So it's very much, it's a very weird movie to watch, because if you watch it, you place it not within the canon of sci-fi movies, but it's like The Warriors or Death Wish or New Jack City.
Yeah.
It's like in that group of films, right. Really, it's, more
sensitive. And so who is the audience rooting for? So if you're a normal audience member, are you kind of rooting for the Predator
You're
rooting for Danny Glover.
Danny
Glover's the hero. You're like, Danny, we want Danny Glover to take down both the gangs and the Predator, and also Gary Busey, who is in this as the
chief?
Government guy.
The captain? Oh,
he's
the
like no, he's
guy.
Like he's the gov- he's like the federal government guy, okay. Uh-huh. Who apparently was supposed to originally be played by by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Somebody's on Twitter said this, so it must be true. But Gary Busey was supposed to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's how he like knows the backstory of the
Predator.
The Predator.
That would have made sense.
Anyway, again, I like Predator 2 is not nearly as good as the first Predator, which is a perfect movie in every respect. But it's interesting and like kind of weird to look at now with a little bit of distance, 30 some years now.
Yeah.
Victorino, how you been, bud?
I am doing great. I'm home alone.
Hey.
So early this morning, oh gosh, they got up at 5:15. What's that noise? Kate got the kids and she brought them up to Connecticut and dropped them off there for a couple of weeks. And then, and she's coming back down in a couple days. And then after that, we'll go up to Jersey, Connecticut.
She doesn't want to stop and like spend a few days with your dad. And she can take her time coming back.
Like I said, she'll be back and then she's gone again. And then, but in the meantime, I'm just here. In fact, it's funny you should mention that I rented a movie, but it's on a kind of a 24-hour loop thing. So if we could just hurry the show, that I can get back to watching it, that'd be great.
Many hours of Civ have you played so far?
None. I've been so busy. So, you know, I was at work and then I came back and I ended up cleaning more than I want. Oh, man, it's such a thankless job. You know, laundry and the stuff that she does and like scrubbing like the shower floor and the sinks. It's terrible. And look at Sonny's face. So, you know, there's that. But you know what I look forward to the most? This is true. What I look forward to the most when I'm home alone is thinking about what am I going to eat? Because this is my opportunity to go somewhere that usually I'll get outvoted on, or somewhere that perhaps my whole house would be repulsed by, or somewhere I'm too embarrassed to admit that I want to go there. Like I'll drive by a place and say, oh, that looks good. And nobody
pig
else
knuckles.
Would. Right. Somebody
I
would get that.
Pig knuckles.
I love pig knuckles. I really do. Of the German, French, or Filipino kind. They're all good. Knuckles are great. But for dinner tonight, I'm going to give you three choices to guess what I had for dinner tonight. Okay.
Ooh, a game.
Here we go. Yes, a game. Okay. Number one, not great Chinese food. That means not the obvious, like there's a Peter Cheng's here, which is everyone raves about it and was written about in the New Yorker, the guy and the whole thing. Okay. So not that, but the kind of places that you drive by and it's just the kind of place that's basically takeout delivery.
The place with the bulletproof window.
Yeah.
Very
basic, very basic, very old school, very bad for you Chinese food. Okay. Which Kate does not want to go to. Okay.
So
that's number one. That's A. B, supermarket fried chicken. You ever go into the supermarket and it's not the rotisserie, but they actually have in a bucket, like Harris Teeter has it in a bucket. And sometimes the quality is questionable. Sometimes you'll get it where you see on the wing tips or the flaps, you can still see a little bit like where the feather was, they plucked it, you know, but okay. It's okay. Supermarket fried chicken, killing JVL. Or three or C, Clamwich, which Kate bought from,
I'm sorry,
Whole
say
Foods.
That again?
Clam Witch. Okay, so Kate bought from Whole Foods a frozen box of 365 fried clams, and I have brioche buns. So I could have put the fried clams with brioche, and I have Duke's tartar sauce, and could have had myself a clam witch. That would be something, that might be trademarked. I should give it, it's probably a Friendly's thing. Clamwich. It's a lot, not to be confused with fishamajig, but the clamwich or the clam boat. So what do you think it is? A, not great Chinese food. B, supermarket fried chicken. Or C, clamwich.
D, all of the above.
I was going to say there's a D. D, I ate everything. No, okay, not D.
Oh, okay. I'm genuinely surprised. I thought you hit all three of those over the course of the day.
When do you make? I'm not an animal. Okay, go ahead.
I would guess Harris Teeter fried chicken.
Okay, JVL.
I literally thought you just did sampled all three.
No,
I thought you did
okay,
the sampler.
No. Okay.
If I had to guess, then I would guess not great Chinese.
Believe it or not, C, the clamwich.
The clamwich.
Oh. And the problem, I ended up putting the whole box in the oven, like on the flat baking sheet.
All 365 clams.
Three, it serves. It's a serving of four, But you know what? It's Whole Foods. So in tribute to Lord Bezos, I had his fried clam strips, and I put it on the brioche with the Duke's tartar sauce, and it was a party the first time. The second sandwich I had, because I had a lot of clams, not so great, and then the leftover clam strips. That's where I am. But I had an apple afterwards.
Did you just like put all of the leftover clams in a bowl and kind of pick at them the rest of the night? Just pop them in, like popcorn?
In my defense, I didn't have a side. I didn't have like French fries or anything, because that would be crazy. Okay.
Do you need me to come over tonight just to watch you, Vic?
I'm alone here.
There's nobody there to help you.
You might see me on air.
Do you have your life alert bracelet?
Like, I
know. Is your bracelet on?
Oh, no, we lost him.
I passed out. And tomorrow, I still have one more night. So tomorrow, I'm thinking I might go to the diner, sit at the counter, because I love the counter, have a little corned beef hash and eggs, and maybe even a milkshake. Speaking of which, this week we're talking about Gunpowder Milkshake on Netflix. Sonny Bunch, how about a big boy review?
Gunpowder Milkshake. When I was watching this movie the other night, I guess the Wednesday it was released, maybe it was the Thursday after it had come out, I was kind of surprised, because I hadn't gotten any sort. I'm usually pretty on top of what's coming out, and I had not really been aware. This was not on my radar at all. Netflix has not done a particularly effective job of getting information about this movie out there, and I was kind of surprised by that, because it was a festival hit. People seemed to like it at the festival, on the festival circuit, and I was just watching and thinking, like, I like this. This is nice, empty spectacle. It's not great, but it's fine. So Gunpowder Milkshake it's basically the shorthand version of the elevator pitch is, it's like Lady John Wick. It's John Wick, but it's ladies. In the opening moments, an older assassin played by Lena Headey from Game of Thrones and 300, she abandons her daughter and says, I gotta get out of here, I gotta go. And the daughter joins the Sisterhood of the Assassins and kills people for the mob, which is run by Paul Giamatti, I guess, kind of. He's like the go-between. Yada, yada, yada. Turns out that the young woman played by Karen Gillan now in her elder years, or in her 20s, has to save a young girl from being murdered by the mob, because her father stole a bunch of money, and then the long story short, the people who he stole it for, everybody was going to die, including the little girl. So I almost feel dumb recounting the plot of this movie, because the plot of this movie doesn't matter at all. It is entirely in service of the kind of empty stylistic spectacle of the whole thing. And the empty stylistic spectacle is fine for what it is. This is not as good as John Wick. It is not the action sequences are not as well coordinated. I really like a lot of the set design. I like a lot of the lighting choices. There's a lot of neon used in this. It has this kind of mid-century modern aesthetic that I like. But the movie as a whole is basically just fine. It's just there to look kind of cool, and as far as that goes, totally acceptable way to kill 2 hours on a Wednesday night if you got nothing else to do and you've got Netflix on. I mean, that is the level at which I am assessing this movie. I liked Karen Gillan a lot. I thought she was good in this. I like Michelle Yeoh a lot. She plays one of the there's a troika of older female assassins. Michelle Yeoh, Carla Gugino, and
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett, thank you. Who kind of, you know, guide her along and help her out and save her from the villainous men. And you know, this is a movie that I think if you wanted to give it a lot of credit, if you wanted to give it too much credit, has something to say about men and women, and but it doesn't really have anything interesting to say, and it's frankly not that interestingly, again, choreographed or shot. The action is fine and nothing more than that. It has a great look, a lot of great camera moves, a lot of great lighting. It's fine. This is a fine movie.
Very stylistic.
It's a fine movie, and I don't have a ton more to say than that. I don't. There's not a whole lot of energy to be expended upon this movie. The one big
it's
mistake
be a short
that it makes.
Episode.
I mean, it is. I don't have a ton to say about this movie. So my big boy review is rambling, kind of on purpose, because that's how I feel about it. But my one big critique of this movie is the same one that I have of a number of these sort of John Wick knockoffs. There are a couple of movies out like this. Hotel Artemis is another one, where it takes the kind of peripheral idea of John Wick about this like underground world of assassins that have all of these rules and all of these rituals and all of these little things that everybody agrees to abide by. And we kind of see them as we go, as the audience. We're kind of introduced to them one at a time, and it creates a little mythology. This is another one of these movies that takes that idea and treats it as the most important part of John Wick, as opposed to the interesting thing that kind of made all the rest of it even cooler, right? Like the reason John Wick works is because it has great action choreography. It's got realistic looking stunts. It's got really well framed and staged and shot action sequences with like camera moves that make sense and things that are planned and not cut together, right? That's the big difference here. And Gunpowder Milkshake has one scene like that, the scene in the bowling alley, which is a really good fight. Really well done and like actually kind of clever. And everything else is just it feels like it's kind of thrown together. All of the other action sequences feel kind of like they're thrown together and not entirely thought through in the same sort of way. Mm-hmm. But it's easier. It is easier to create silly rules for an assassin world guild sort of thing than it is to choreograph a big action sequence. And that's why these movies, again, like Hotel Artemis is the other one that really springs to mind, ape that part of John Wick and not the hard part of John Wick to ape, which is the actual action. So that's it. I'm done rambling. Sorry.
Thank you. So, look, we were able to stretch that out. JVL, what did you think? And when did you just see it? Did you see it today, yesterday, or
watched it yesterday? There is less to it than meets the eye. So it's So there was a time in the mid to late 90s when there were a lot of indie auteur type filmmakers and directors who wanted to make a name for themselves, and they would do these weird stylized cool movies, right? And
the great age of Tarantino knockoffs,
right? The great, but some of which were pretty good knockoffs,
some of
right?
which were very good.
Doug Liman,
a couple of Tarantino
knockoffs, right?
That's right.
And you would see that there would be directors with significant talent, right? Like Tarsim. Remember Tarsim?
Just one name, Tarsim.
Yeah, he sort of like blew out and, you know, didn't come to, but was good enough visually that you're like, oh, this is interesting, right? You know, this sort of, it demands a little bit of attention.
Are you talking about the guy who directed The Cell?
Yeah. Okay. And you know, you see little, there are movies like this, like, honestly, Reservoir Dogs is the classic movie, right, about this. The Gunpowder Milkshake has a clear. Is it a pair of directors? A pair of Russian directors, I think.
It's a woman. It's an Israeli director. His name is Navat Pushado or something.
Oh,
like
that was a man.
I'll look it up.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
This is a guy who is not a top tier talent. Just is not a top tier talent, and you can see it in almost every frame. There, you know, it's like, oh, we're gonna have cool things, right? Except that the execution on every cool thing, even down to the set design and lighting, just isn't great. In the writing is weak. It just sort of fails. And you could see how if you had handed this project to
a director with talent. Again, not somebody we like, right? I mean, give it to Michael Bay, right? You would have gotten something interesting. And what you got instead is not interesting.
Mm-hmm. The director's name is Navat Pupushado, who is again, Israeli-born. And he directed a movie I actually really, really like with Aaron Kshales called Big Bad Wolves, which Tarantino himself, like, championed. It was basically like the Israeli Reservoir Dogs. And is really interesting and, like, actually has interesting things to say about the nature of evil and that sort of thing. And I don't know if the downgrade here, because there's a huge downgrade between like the step down from Big Bad Wolves to this. I assume you guys have not seen Big Bad Wolves.
I have not. No.
But the downgrade from Big Bad Wolves to this is striking, and I wonder how much not having his writing partner working on this with him hurt him.
Yeah, it's a mess, and we could talk about the movie. There are things to like about it, right? There are, you know, again, the Coen brothers, right? Imagine the Coen brothers version of Gunpowder Milkshake and what that would have looked like, right? It would have been like half Raising Arizona, half No Country for Old Men or something like that, right? It would have been interesting. And this, you know, the most interesting scene in it is a fight in a hallway of a medical clinic where the three bad guys are all basically crippled, having previously fought with Karen Gillan's character. And Karen Gillan has had her arms paralyzed by a bad guy doctor, yes, who, like, gives, yeah, her shots to make her arms numb.
Who, if you look at very briefly, you think it's Peter Stormare, but it's not.
Right. And so you get this fight that is actually a little bit reminiscent of the trailer fight in Raising, yeah, Arizona, yeah, right? It's just weird and it's funny. You know, it's
I interesting. Like that.
And there are some moments like that, but then it just sort of the air comes out, right? There's two, you know, you get like, oh, something interesting happening, and, mm-hmm, and then it just,
right. Yeah.
And you see,
yeah,
this even down to the casting choices, right? So the gang member head, who I don't have IMDb pulled up, he has this great voice.
Yes, tall English actor.
That's Ray Winstone, isn't it?
No,
that's
not, not Winstone. Ralph Ineson.
Yeah, Ralph Ineson. Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's just fabulous voice. You know, you think, oh, that's a great bit of casting.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the guy who is his heavy, who is like running his army of, is just some random
weak
Euro trash, right? I mean, no, just like you look at this actor. This actor brings nothing to
a letdown
to the screen, yeah, and especially does bring something to the screen because he is paired up on screen with Karen Gillan and Lena Headey and Carla Gugino, all of whom are really great actresses.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's, again, stuff to like about it. I really like Karen Gillan. I think Karen Gillan brings this undercurrent of comedy to everything she does. Like, it's just, it's always, yeah, there underneath the surface, and it serves her really, really well because she can be, yeah, funny without trying to be funny. And there are things to like about it, but yeah, just,
yeah. Yeah, no, it's exactly how I feel. Like, you can't even blame this on standard Netflix bloat, because this is not a movie that was made by Netflix. This is a movie that Netflix picked up, right? Like, a, yeah, lot of movies like this, you know, you look at it and you're like, oh, so, okay, so this is 2 hours and 20 minutes long because,
right,
Netflix makes
Netflix
everything
thing.
2 hours, 20 minutes.
That's right.
But this is an hour 55. It's fine. But it could have been much tighter. It could have been, again, it has pretensions that it does not know what to do with. It has things it thinks it wants to say about women and the treatment of women and men, and but it does nothing interesting with that at all. It does nothing interesting with
even it. Just about what it is. So it presents itself almost as a fable, and you see this in the dialogue is overwritten and is intentionally overwritten, intentionally, yeah, stilted to connote, I believe, that you are not in the real world. Right.
Right.
I mean, it really is trying to let you know this is not the real world. This is a fable we are in, and we are telling you a story. And that's okay. You're like, okay, where do we go with this? And, mm-hmm, but then it doesn't quite know what to do with that idea. No. Everything is underbaked.
Right.
And So, of course, Victor Unu, you're going to say you loved it, right?
Okay, first of all, I was very conflicted because I don't know what I find more attractive, Karen Gillan as human or as robot, because I thought she was kind of, you know, there's something about
Nebula
the robot.
Karen Gillan is awful.
Yeah, no, there's something about her. That's crazy to say, but, you know, there's something about it. It's like, ooh, you know, what's that? So it's kind of weird to see me. I don't think I had seen her in another movie other than as being Nebula.
Stuber.
So. Yeah,
Jumanji.
Oh, is she in Stuber?
She is in Stuber.
Even realize.
So she is in. So Stuber is a terrible movie. She's in the first 3 minutes of it, where she is Dave Bautista's cop partner.
Oh, the partner.
The cop partner.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah.
You watch that, and for the first 3 minutes, I thought this movie is going to be great because I want to watch Karen Gillan and Dave Bautista do buddy cop because they're in the elevator, and I think he is talking about his daughter having sex or something, and she's like, "Yeah, oh sure, she's still a virgin, right?" And he's like, "Ah,
right,"
and it's hysterical, and then she dies. And you're like, "Wow, that's the movie I wanted."
Yeah,
you've seen her in Jumanji. She's great in the Jumanji movies.
I never watched Jumanji.
She's
the
redhead
with Robin Williams.
No.
Kevin Hart.
I skipped all of them. I haven't seen any of those. But good for
really?
Her. I'm glad. Yeah, I haven't seen any.
Oh, she's great.
Okay, it's funny you should mention. By the way, Tarsim. I think where I first heard Tarsim was, I believe this is not by looking it up. I believe he directed the REM video for "Losing My Religion."
I believe that's correct. He's
is
a,
that right?
Music video director.
Thank you.
And do you remember? Do you remember who The Cell tried to turn into a serious actor?
Jennifer Lopez.
She
and
was
also
Vince Vaughn. Jennifer Lopez was a serious actress. It tried to make Vince Vaughn not be a comedy actor and into a serious actor.
Well, so. Vince Vaughn has successfully made that turn in more recent years. It just took him a little while to get there.
And Tarsim, not to be confused with another one named director, McGee.
No, very different.
All right,
very different aesthetics.
So what'd you think?
On those
okay, so what do you think? I gave it about
quadrants.
It's between about a B and a B plus. So the plot is an A, very easy to understand. There were no disguises. No disguises, no masks.
You never had to reach over to Kate and ask
what
was happening.
Okay, no. I understood. Very straightforward. Okay. Duration was, it barely made it an A, but it was under 2 hours. It was under 2 hours, okay? Violence, action, A+. You had a beheading.
The forklift beheading was pretty good.
Yeah. That was something. It happened to, I was like, what was, oh, it was a forklift. Oh my gosh, it was great. Okay. Sex nudity is an F. And if some listeners,
it's an R-rated movie.
It's an R-rated movie. B, people think it's unfair. I got two words for people who think that's an unfair grading. Those two words are Atomic Blonde. A+. Okay, so I thought the same thing. For me, it was like Kill Bill meets John Wick. And it's like, okay, it's like, I don't know, is it? But then it's like, it's too obvious. It's too derivative. There are things I loved about this movie. The car chase in the garage where she has to drive. And it's kind of cute, I know, but...
The little girl. She can't use her arms, so she...
That's
right.
I didn't realize that was permanent. I thought that she wouldn't be able to use her arms only for a minute. I didn't realize it was like, that's it, until she gets the antidote. And I thought that was great with a Porsche 944, by the way, which I spotted in a second, because I had an eighth grade teacher who had that as a car, and it was very unusual because in parochial school, you know, the teachers in parochial school where I went to St. Joe's and Monsignor Donovan, they make less than public school teachers, you know, in Tom's River. So you are either very committed or you should be committed. And, you know, but it turns out his father was very rich, so he drove around this Porsche, and it was a red Porsche 944, so it looked exactly like that. And I thought that was
great looking car.
Great looking car. The other thing I liked was the hallway scene, as JVL just mentioned, where she came. It's original, can't use her hands, and just has to snap her way in order to get the gun to fire. That was kind of funny. What was the scene that you just mentioned, Sonny, also that I thought was very good? Oh, the bowling alley.
I thought the bowling alley scene was probably the best choreographed fight, right? That's the one that actually looks like they put some thought into how it was lit and how it was framed and how it was shot.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of backlit, like almost in a silhouette. It's very, I thought that was very well done. JVL's right, though. I do think that the hospital fight is better just because it's cleverer and it's funnier. It's like more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and then, the other thing that
and then everything is so generic after that.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, I kind of liked when, so when she makes the handoff for the kid, the gang who has kidnapped the kid, they are all wearing monster masks. And so one of them is the Wolfman, one of them is Frankenstein, one of them is Dracula.
They're great looking masks, by the way.
They really were good looking masks.
Really, I need that.
But
I
then, so
that.
They leave with the money, and she goes to chase them. And before these guys have even gotten out of the parking garage, they've all started shooting each other because they're such a gang who can't shoot straight. And that's hysterical. She's sitting there watching them do all their work for her. But then, funny, she winds up, in the end, killing the guy in the vampire mask by driving a stake through his heart.
Oh,
yeah, little things like that. Right? I thought we're like, right. That's
it. Because
again, it's
nice
telling
cut.
You we're in a fable, right?
Right.
But then they bring you out of it with, you know, Lena Headey has this very funny line where she's opening up a secret passage, and Karen Gillan's character says, "Where does that go?" And Lena Headey is fucking Narnia. And, you know, it's this like, okay, so hold on, I guess we're not in a fable, right? We're in
because
a place with recognizable, in the same way that they've got, like, you know, literature draped throughout, right? And I'm sure it all has been right. We're getting Virginia Woolf and Jane Austen
that symbolism.
No, it
it's
is
symbolism,
but it's also taking you out of the idea that
symbolism.
in the real world again, now, right?
Again, that's the sort of like John Wick-y thing that annoyed me, where it was like, oh, this is very clever. It's a very clever. Assassin world that they've built.
Yeah. Well, and then,
you know, or like the nurse's station, the little jar that they're supposed to put their guns into,
the
and everybody knows exactly
right.
what to do. And it's like, okay, I get it. Well, you know, we all.
Because like in John Wick, you have the hotel.
It's like the Intercontinental. It's like the Continental, right?
Right.
Like,
and then there you also have the diner.
But this is,
you know, no guns.
But this is, yeah, what, this is what really bugs me about that, and the execution of this is incredibly poor in Gunpowder Milkshake. In all of the places which are supposed to be part of the mythos of this world, none of the rules hold for even 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So in the diner, which is shot, by the way, at all sort of magic hour.
Yeah,
as if
it was shot with green screen,
right? As if, but
yeah,
it, but
like
if
it was, yeah.
but the
yeah,
idea yeah. being that outside looks like magic hour, as if the diner itself is on a different plane of existence, right? The diner itself is Valhalla, or something,
right.
And the idea is that, like, you know, nobody's allowed to bring weapons to the diner, and the very first time we're in the diner, Lena Headey has a weapon and she shoots and kills somebody,
then the next time
we're in the diner. Literally everybody has weapons. Every single person in there has got it. And you're like, wait a minute, hold on. So these rules don't work. And the same thing with the medical place, right? So we have this hospital that's like the assassin hospital, which has to mean that it's sanctuary that everybody goes to, everybody knows. That's why she knows the rule, right? You put your guns in the cookie jar, right? Except that, like, the very first time we're in there, the doc is like selling her out and like isn't providing medical, doesn't actually provide any medical care. Like the patient dies, right? Like you really hold on a minute. None of this works.
Right.
Yeah.
That's for me, it was the in-between stuff. So in between some very interesting action sequences, you had just filler that just didn't work. I did have questions.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And it's funny, actually, my first question on my script here literally says, question, where does this take place? Because that's what I was trying to figure out. You know, is it real? Is it not real?
Well, Europe.
Is
the
it Prague or Budapest? Everybody loves it. Her
plate.
Her license plate is CH, which I think is Canton Helvetica. So that was, I was like, oh, it must be in Switzerland. But, you know, I don't know. They could be in wherever, Prague or wherever. I have no idea. It looked lovely. But also, I don't see any civilians. You know, I mean,
yeah,
the one
I
chef.
There's no civilians. Yes.
There's a chef and they come out into a restaurant. But there's like the streets are empty. You know, and it's just like there's nobody. It was just really weird. So it's like
no extras.
Right. So it's not like, again, they're
floating.
I mean,
this was also a movie that was made for probably like $10 million.
Oh.
I would guess.
Oh, all right.
It was a very
Yeah.
It was a very, yeah. It was a very.
I mean, as opposed to like a Mission Impossible movie where they're filming it on the actual streets and it's mania and everything else. Okay.
Maybe like $15 million, but it's not an expensive movie, this one.
The next question I have is, did someone else finish off the girl's dad? Because there was a lot more blood. I mean, or was it just he died of the wound?
Well,
somebody else killed him.
I think. Well, I guess the doctor just let him die.
Oh, okay. Mm.
I think maybe he actually killed him. Maybe he actively killed him.
It's weird. It's a lot more. Okay.
Wikipedia says this movie had a $30 million budget, but I don't know what they spent $30 million on.
Okay. Paul Giamatti's salary. Okay. And the last question is, where are they heading in the end? Because it looks like a Subaru commercial.
They're on the coast. I have some questions, Victorino.
JVL.
So the librarians who, I believe the idea is, so these women who run the library with all the guns, I believe the idea is that they're essentially like a ninja clan. Right? So they are the ninja who are hired out by the daimos or what, I don't know the ruling houses, mm-hmm, and they mm-hmm, use them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So they make all sorts of like weird choices, like when Michelle Yao comes in and she's got a machine gun, which looks like rock and roll from G.I. Joe, a 50 cal that she's using.
Right.
And then she just like tosses that and picks up a chain.
Instead, her MO is to strangle people, which is a little time consuming considering there's a lot of people coming
in. And
after
I'm like,
them.
You just had a machine gun.
Right.
Maybe you keep the machine gun.
Yes.
And then similarly, they have a Gatling gun mounted inside a VW minibus, and it looks like they managed to kill two guys with it.
Yes, I totally agree, including failing to kill the.
And fails to kill. It's a damn Gatling gun.
Can't you wait for him to rush and supposed to just. They do this. You see this at the time, a lot of movies where and then they're out of bullets. So I don't know. You're right. And then she has to try to use the tomahawk. That was frustrating. It was a huge guy. It was like, this machine gun. It was insane. It was like,
but again, as a choice.
As a choice.
Why do you put a Gatling gun into the movie if it does
inside
not play a significant role? Right.
It makes a cool trailer shot.
You only put it in if you were going to do something interesting with it.
And I'm pretty sure Gatling you're right gun, that they just knocked out two people with it.
Yeah.
That was it.
And I have one more thing.
Yes.
Is it me or is Paul Giamatti about ready to play Billy Joel in the Billy Joel movie?
Well, the late Billy Joel, sure. Yeah. He could play late Billy Joel, probably closer in age, but
he looks a lot like Billy Joel right now.
You know why?
Now.
Because he's got the mustache goatee thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the bags under the eyes and stuff.
Yes.
He really looks like Billy Joel
and
right now.
He probably has the fat fingers because that was Billy Joel's thing. He always hated that he had fat fingers. That's how I felt about the movie. It just, there were good parts, but there was, interspersed with a lot of bad. So I think we all agree on that, unfortunately. Also, I like Lena Headey, but I can't see her in anything other than, I keep on thinking it's Cersei Lannister, so I just don't trust her in any movie.
I choose violence.
Yeah.
Remember.
Well, she was also really good in the Judge Dredd reboot. She played the crime boss in that movie. Very good.
She has been great in everything she's ever been in.
She's great. I love her. I think she's fantastic.
I saw the first time. So not the first. The first time I saw her, it was probably like the Sarah Connor Chronicles on Fox, the short lived. And I would tell you that I believe she is the best Sarah Connor.
Wow.
But I then saw. Many years later, I just rented this like little BBC series it was a TV series that she must have been 18 years old in. And it's about a priest in Ireland who's a young priest, but he's not like one of those bring you down with all his guilt trip priests. He's a cool priest.
He's got a guitar
and he wears sneakers and stuff. And she is the girl in the village who doesn't believe in God anymore. And he starts working on her, and maybe they'll fall in love too, or maybe she'll turn to God and embrace you. Who knows? Anyway, it's this preposterous show,
And it was just one of those moments when you're looking at bad, you know, bad TV and you realize, oh, that person is going to be a star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because she's really good.
Yeah.
And that's Lena Headey, great in everything she does.
Great in 300. Love her in 300.
She is great in 300. She's really great in 300.
Do we have any more thoughts on Gunpowder Milkshake?
Anyone who isn't us is the enemy.
Okay. Spirit of the Week. We don't have a Spirit of the Week. Corrections and shout-outs. What are you drinking, JV?
Is that a glass of vodka?
That's just water.
That's just water. Me too.
Water.
Drinking water.
Diet Dr. Pepper.
Very as you would in Texas, by the way.
So good.
Shout outs over the weekend at my wife's work retreat. Two listeners to the show came up to me, very excited. I was very excited to meet them. One is Nick Gallagher and James Cunningham. So thank you, fellas. In fact, I believe it was Nick who was he turned to his girlfriend or fiance and said, do you know this podcast, the Subbeacon? And she goes, no. And I said, okay, that was time for me to turn around. Okay, I'll see you later. Sorry. But anyway, thanks. Thanks for listening.
No woman has ever answered yes to that question.
That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We are there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
For the record, we have many lovely lady listeners.
Yes,
I just, but I'm saying no. Any guy who has ever like turned to a
don't
woman randomly
it.
And
don't
said,
use
"Have
it
you
to impress a girl?
Have you heard of this podcast?"
Because you won't believe this large headed guy standing
is,
right here. He's on the show.
I was going to say, in fact, one of our female listeners has been at my house the last couple days. Tanya McKenna. Tanya McKenna is visiting the last family.
You're kidding me.
And it's been
whole
super
family
fun
or just
Tanya?
Her?
Just Tanya. Their daughter is away at camp, and her husband's home working, and so she came, and G Money has been stuck to her like glue.
That's nice.
G Money loves
That's
her.
Nice. I remember I had lunch with her husband and
you went out. Didn't they
Adam
take you to
Novak?
Some crazy sandwich place?
Piemonte's
in Pittsburgh.
Yes. Those were the days. They stick the giant knife in the middle of the sandwich.
Is that where you get the clamwich?
No. You have to go to Friendly's. You
got
to go to Friendly's, and I don't think there are any Friendly's south of New Jersey, JVL. Is that right?
No, there was a Friendly's in...
Oh, really?
100% a Friendly's in Stafford, Virginia. I know that
for a
fact.
I don't know why they went out of business.
So, Victorino, there was a Friendly's in Woodbridge, Virginia, when I first moved to Woodbridge, and it went out of business and became a gun shop. But still with the same Friendly's architecture, like all the same Friendly's architecture. And you know, with the double windows for the takeout. Versus and then the gun shop went out of business and is now a laundromat. And again, the building
is
unchanged.
Because it was a very trademark building. Yes. So now you're going in a, you know, where they used to make the fribble.
It's always it's always funny when you get to like what used to clearly be a Pizza Hut.
Mm-hmm.
That's
exactly right.
Or a Burger King.
There
or
is a barbecue.
Like, okay.
There's a barbecue joint up here called Sloppy Mama's on Lee Highway that used to be a Pizza Hut, and the roof is so unmistakable. Okay. They're like, what are you gonna do? You just have to wreck the whole thing, or no? You just roll with it. My thought is I'm just going to. Go for a run tomorrow to work out that clamwich. My only fear is that I'll be like on Lee Highway when the clamwich decides to go bon voyage.
Oh, no. I'm sure it'll be fine.